this book that we've been looking at, James, all about how to live wisely and what it means to live as a wise person. It also is one of the things that I want us to think about this morning is what does it mean to live in a wise way that maybe reflects what it means to be a Christian. That is what it means to. There's lots of ways that the world thinks says are wise, but actually we need to be aware of what is wise and what is foolish. We need to be aware, and I wonder sometimes, what do we think is when we might know what the good news is in our heads, but what is the good news that we live out? What is the good news that the world offers us? I've been thinking about this week. What if you were to ask the world, what is the world's gospel? I think one of the prevailing messages of the world is this. Good things come to those who earn it. Good things come to those who earn it. Good things come to those who try harder, who do more. It is the get better improvement gospel. Good things come to those who earn it. Now, on one level, I want to say that we know where we might be going this morning, but we don't want to write that sentiment off altogether. Because in the working world, that has to be the case, doesn't it? In the working world, in all professions, you have to work hard to become a doctor, a teacher, an electrician. You have to work hard, you have to go through training to get a job and earn, and there is something right about that. That is true about the working world, that good things, jobs, promotions, come to those who work hard, who earn it. But we wouldn't apply, or we shouldn't apply, or perhaps we don't apply that to the same way of thinking if we were thinking about family life. You will always be a son or a daughter to your parents. Your identity as a child of a particular family is unchanging. It does not change. You can't become more or less of a child. There's no family promotions. It's just part of who you are, part of what it means to be you. Now, I'm not saying that all families are perfect, but what I am saying is that you will always be the child of your parents, and nothing can change that. The temptation is to think Christianity, following Jesus, is like the working world and not like the life of the family. That is the temptation. The temptation is to think that God's way of dealing with us is that good things will come from him to us if we earn it from him. Perhaps we think, if we live more like Jesus, then perhaps he'll love us a bit more. Perhaps he won't be disappointed with us. And so what happens as we, particularly as we read the book of James, which has lots of things about what the living God tells us how we should live, we come to think like, perhaps we may come to think like that. I must tame my tongue. I must be kinder to everyone, especially those who are different to me. I must stop myself from letting the world's values grab my attention. I must spend time on less time on social media. I must get a better routine to regulate my time so that I can do more that is good and wholesome. I must live more like Jesus. I must be wiser and better. I must do it all because otherwise maybe God won't really love. I must do it. It is the gospel of the world has infected how we think about the living God. We don't preach. We don't believe, in fact, that the gospel of Jesus Christ is about trying harder. It's not about behavior modification so that you can look good in front of everyone else, so that you feel better about life, so that you, it's not the gospel of self-improvement, so that you can compare better to the person next door, or even compare better to the person that sat next to you this morning. This passage cuts through all of that. It cuts through all of it. We believe in the gospel, the good news of grace, that God's love is not earned, it is given. It's not about what we've done. It can't be earned. It is given as a gift. That is what we're thinking about this morning. James has spoken about what the wise life looks like. He said, as we looked a few weeks ago, chapter 1, he says three things that sort of constitute or tell us what the wise life is. Chapter 1, just at the end, he says, those who consider themselves religious, and he says three things. They'll keep a tight rein on their tongues, so they'll speak well. He says that they'll look after orphans and widows, the poor. They'll think well of the poor, and he says that they'll keep themselves unpolluted, unstained from the world's values. How you speak, how you treat the poor, what you do with what the world is telling you. If you do that right, then you're a wise man, says James. That's true religion. The wisdom of what it means to be a Christian. True religion. And then we come to the beginning of our chapter this morning, verse 13. It smacks you right between the eyes. Who is wise and understanding among you? Who actually lives like this? Who is the one, as we read, who can tame their tongue? Who is the one who shows no favoritism? Who is the one who treats the poor? Or everyone? Because they're made in the image of God. And what we get in these opening, in this last part of, in all the verses essentially that we're looking at, is this description of the two ways. It's a summary really of what's been going on in James, the summary of the foolish way versus the wise way, the earthly way versus the way that is from above, the heavenly way. And so that is what we're going to look at. What does it really mean to be wise? And we'll start by looking at the earthly way. The first thing, the earthly wisdom is selfish ambition. Earthly wisdom is selfish ambition. And now, it's a funny word, ambition, isn't it? Because ambition in itself is not actually a bad thing. I don't know if you've ever heard, or maybe you've seen this on nature documentaries and the like, you've ever heard of the Capuchin monkey. Ever heard of the Capuchin monkey? You might have seen it. It is the monkey that gets a nut and gets a rock and holds it with two hands and slams it down on the nut to break the nut. If you want to see ambition, you watch the baby one. You watch the baby one. It sees its parent smash the nut and then it goes up after the mummy or daddy, Capuchin monkey, has left. Picks up the rock and tries to master breaking the nut. That is one ambitious monkey. It will keep going and going with the rook above its head, keep failing and keep trying. And in many ways you think, well, go on, little monkey. Good for you. Keep going. It is a good thing. The Capuchin monkey is ambitious. It has a goal in mind. It wants food from the nut. Sees its dad and wants to copy and break the nut itself. Having a goal, a desire to achieve something, is not a bad thing. Having a career goal, wanting to improve, to grow, is not a bad thing, is it? It doesn't have to be a big thing like that. You can have healthy ambition over sort of everyday smaller things. Wanting to have friends. Wanting to gain a new skill, get better at cooking. Wanting to be healthy. An ambition to be a healthy person. It could even be, I've heard of this new TV series. I've got this goal, this ambition. I'm going to relax and enjoy comfort watching this new TV series. Have a tidy house. Wanting to see more of your family. Nothing wrong with those things. To have goals and ambitions. It is not wrong to be ambitious. Of course, it's not wrong to want to have friends, to relax, to see family, to be healthy. However, there is a difference between good ambition and selfish ambition. Look with me in verse 14. But if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Selfish ambition, on the other hand, is really another helpful way, I think, about talking about what sin is. It is where the good thing, the good ambition, the thing that you desire, takes over. When the good ambition takes over, and either one of two things happens. Either you achieve it, or you aim to achieve it at any cost, treating people as collateral damage along the way, when reaching the goal is more important than anything else in your life. Or two, you are full of envy at the person who achieves your ambition instead of you. Because envy is just the other side of the coin to selfish ambition. It's when you haven't achieved your ambition, but the person down the road has, and you're not happy for them. You're just jealous. James has told us that this way of living, it is ugly. It is ugly. He's told us all the way through. In chapter 3, you're jealous. And what does it lead to, that way of living, of thinking? It leads to disorder. It leads to evil practice. Earlier before, it leads to speaking, not being able to tame your tongue, and saying something that chapter 4 will get you into a fight, a quarrel, into coveting, into hating in your mind. It's jealousy. It leads to praying only for yourself and not for anyone else, praying with wrong motives. Because this is the chief aim, or it actually can become the chief aim of your life, is to get that thing, whatever it is. And when someone gets in the way, wow. If someone becomes an obstacle, well then that's when the real problems start. Last week we saw about taming the tongue, that when we speak like that way, our tongues are like a fire that destroys people. And the way of the world promotes this way of life. Don't we see that? The mottos of the world, look after number one. How many times did you hear that growing up? Love yourself first. The latest one is you do you. The sinful nature is a selfish one. And it is so prevalent. It's so prevalent in our society that it's actually promoted. The world agrees with the deceit in our hearts and says that it's good. This is a good way to live. This is a way to make a success of your life. Follow your feelings. And it is difficult, impossible, I think, actually, to escape. Your sinful nature desires it, and the world tells you this is how to get it, and what you desire is good. Go for it by any means. Just one way that we see that in our world, you think how advertising works. You get that drip, drip, constant feed of proposing, suggesting what the good life is. The perfect family Christmas on the Bisto adverts. The perfect house from M&S. The perfect car with VW. The perfect body. The perfect friends. The best TV shows. The perfect teeth. The perfect skin. The perfect holiday. It's selling to us and appealing to our inner goals and ambitions what we desire. This is what you need in life to be happy. This is what you need in life to be content. Be ambitious for it. Go for it at any costs. And well done if you do that. Well done. Let's celebrate people who do that. Chapter 4, verse 4 is very clear. Don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God, hostility? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. If that's not the way of wise living, what is? What is the way? Who is wise and understanding among you? And then we get to the second way. The second way is the wise way of living. The wisdom that we don't want is from the world. Verse 15, it is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. The wisdom that we do want is from a different place. It's different because it comes from somewhere different. It originates from somewhere different. It is not of this world. Verse 17, but the wisdom that comes from heaven, from above, it is from above, is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. The wisdom that we need is from above. We know that from what we've already seen in James. You remember the first chapter? If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God. He gives you wisdom from above. He says every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He gives generously to all who, without finding fault, the wisdom you need for life, you cannot find on earth. You can't find it. You can't find it here. You can't find it out there. It comes from above. It is the word of God to pray and look and know Jesus Christ, to behold him and see. If you want to know what wisdom, you just look at him. You look at the man Jesus Christ and how he lived. Look at the living God. What are these verses in verse 17? What is this verse? Surely, is it not a description of Jesus Christ? You replace the word wisdom with Jesus and it makes just as much sense. The Son of God, Jesus, he comes down from heaven and he's pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy, good fruit, impartial, and sincere. That's Jesus, is it not? That's Jesus Christ. If you want to know what wisdom is, you look at Jesus, you look and behold, and see his magnificent beauty. It is the living God. And the wisest thing that Jesus did that displayed all of those characteristics, 1 Corinthians 1, verse 22, Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. What does he say about that? That the cross is the power and the wisdom of God. The cross is the wisest thing that has ever happened on this earth. It is foolishness to man, but it is wisdom to those who are being saved. The weakest and most foolish looking thing that Jesus did, being crucified, dying on a cross, was the power and wisdom of God on this earth. You notice how the cross meets all those qualities of what James defines. The cross is pure. The man on the cross was sinless. It is peace loving. It brought us from being at war with him to being reconciled and having peace with him. It was considerate. He was thinking of us the whole time as more important than himself. He submitted to the Father's will. It is full of mercy. He withholds the punishment from us and receives all the punishment on himself. It is good fruit. It is impartial, offered to everyone. Doesn't matter where you've been, what you've done, who you are, the cross does not discriminate because of age, race, social background, or anything else. The offer of forgiveness is for everyone. And then finally, the cross is sincere. Jesus meant it. He's not two-faced. He doesn't slag you off behind your back. He's sincere and his offer stands. You won't be left with egg on your face if you turn to Christ. Jesus Christ, the living God, is wisdom. And the gospel, the good news, is the wisest thing that has ever happened. Now, I don't know how you feel at this point. Because so far, there have been two ways presented. The unwise worldly way of living, that of selfish ambition and envy, that results in all kinds of evil, of discord, of quarrelling. And then the wise way of living, that James has just referred to, the unwise way and the wise way, the wise way of Christ that we've just looked at, and the two could not be more different, could they? And in fact, they are completely opposite in their outcomes, what they bring about. One brings death, the other brings life. And The whole point here is to show us what we're really like. And I want to stress, not to condemn you, but to show you that the wise way that Jesus demonstrates to us, the wise life, the beautiful life, is actually beyond us. Humanly speaking, to live like Jesus is impossible. And we don't want to admit the impossibility. We don't want to. The gospel of good things come to those who earn it, we actually quite like that, even though it's impossible. We like to be, in some sense, in control of making ourselves better. We like that I must try harder. I must speak better. I must be more peaceable. We see that list of what Jesus is like, and we like to put a plan in action. I must be more considerate. I must be more sincere. I must treat everyone the same. I must be more like Jesus. Do you know what? Starting next week, I'm going to put a plan in action to do everything I can every day to have it all regimented and worked out so that I can be more like Jesus. That is what I'm going to do. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to do everything I can to be the best Christian I can be in the village. Can I tell you, if you do that? If any of us think that is the way to become more like Jesus, you will fail. You might modify your behaviour for a day or two, but it won't last. Christianity, following Jesus, is not about trying harder to be better, trying harder to fit in, trying harder to be accepted by the people in your church. The wise life that Jesus presents to us, if it's down to you to do what he's asked, it is impossible. We could say it's an impossible command. No matter how hard you try, you'll never do it. And so what do you do if the try harder doesn't? Well, then we come to verse 5 and verse 6. Or do you think Scripture says without reason that he jealously longs for the Spirit he's caused to dwell in us? He longs for that Spirit to come forth. But he gives us more grace. That is why Scripture says God opposes the proud, which shows favour to the humble. That word for favour is just the word karen. It's the same word as grace. Same word for as used for grace earlier in the verse. And verse 10. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. If you want to live the wise life, if you want to be lifted up to live as God intended you to live, the only way that you can do that is by admitting to God that you can. Lord, I've tried to tame my tongue, but I can't. Lord, I've tried to treat everyone the same, but I keep giving people preferential treatment. I try to convince myself that I'm better than I am. I've tried, but I can't do it. I know I have this selfish ambition, and I've tried to do the right way, but I can't. You know, the temptations from the devil are too attractive to resist. When it says resist the devil, you can't say, I'm going to resist the devil. He's a powerful foe, and we would love to take credit and resist him by just sheer willpower. You'd feel indestructible. I resisted the devil. But we can't. We want to clean ourselves, but we can't. We want to take credit for being a good person, but we can't. The grieving, the mourning, the wailing, and the sin comes not just because of the sins themselves, but because change seems so elusive, out of reach. It's the frustration of not being able to change. Why do I keep doing this? It's like running on a treadmill and thinking you're actually going somewhere. You put in effort but don't move. And then there's this perplexing reality in this passage. The perplexing yet beautiful thing about the gospel. That the humility in admitting that you don't have what it takes to be wise is the wisest thing you will ever do. The humility in admitting that you don't have what it takes to be wise is the wisest thing you will ever do. The humility in saying, Jesus Christ, the only way I can live like you is if you change me from the inside. If you clean me. The only reason I can resist the devil is because you resisted him in the wilderness and my life is found in you. The only way to wash my hands, we, the double-minded, is by saying, Jesus, wash me, clean me. I can't cleanse myself. I can't live the wise life without you. I can't do all this stuff. Come to Jesus in humility. Draw near to him. Draw near to him. And he will lift you up. He will exalt you. He will make you like himself. He will make his impossible commands possible. So there's two ways. The only way to live like Jesus, to come in humility and admit that you can't do it. You need Jesus to give you a godly tongue. You need Jesus to give you a heart that sees people the way he does. And you need Jesus to keep yourself unstained from the world. I'm going to conclude with a parable that Jesus told. One of the men is wise, and the other is a fool. Two men went up to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. The humility in admitting that you don't have what it takes is the wisest thing you will ever do. God looks on the humble and gives them grace, forgiveness, peace, and transformation.